Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, hey, Ellie my so me had a come back again with the new style. Le 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 le. Hey, 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 yawo mi, every time I see you, I dey fall in love. He do me, do me, do me, do me, eh, eh. Like say I don't dey follow. He do me, do me, do me, do me, eh, eh. Like say I don't dey follow. Element, they give you the reason. Your love, they give me the season. This time, na so so wahala. Baby girl, they give me the fever. Baby girl, can I have your number so that we can see the club together? Make I feel you. Make you feel me. Wine, wine, dance, dance. At the club, night, night. Baby girl, can I have your number? Come on, show gotcha for me. Yawo me, yawo me, yawo me. Every time I see you, I just fall in love. See, yawo me, yawo me, yawo me. Every time I see you, I dey fall in love. He do me, do me, do me, do me, eh, eh. Like say I don't dey follow. He do me, do me, do me, do me, eh, eh. Like say I don't dey follow. Ma jaye ori mi, ma jaye ori mi. Omo so bade, ka jo sad loku. Yawo mi, yawo mi, yawo mi. Every time I see you, I dey fall in love. See, yawo mi, yawo mi, yawo mi. Every time I see you, I dey fall in love. He do me, do me, do me, do me, eh, eh. Like say I don't dey follow. He do me, do me, do me, do me, eh, eh. Like say I don't. Omo na one by one we dey go. Omo na me and you na today. Omo jaja yo la baka de shaye. Omo mo de ma de ba o dele. Eli ma don come again now. Eli ma don come again now. Hey, now wetin na dey find baba don do am for me. Yawo mi, yawo mi, yawo mi. Every time I see you, I dey fall in love. You see, yawo mi, yawo mi, yawo mi. Every time I see you, I dey fall in love. He do me, do me, do me, do me, eh, eh. Like say I don't dey follow. He do me, do me, do me, do me, eh, eh. Like say I don't dey follow.
Divine, all blessed, peace and love, joy and prosperity. You are listening now live to the Divine Prince, Pan-African spiritualist, practitioner, author, and advisor, Udu Obeya Bokua. sharing with you in all things spiritual, mystical, metaphysical, cosmic, evolutionary, revolutionary, healing, and holistic from a Pan-African hoodoo world spiritualist perspective, understanding that all is indeed a blessing if you can just see beyond the veil, for it is all just an illusion and a test. And one of the greatest divine mysteries of this life cycle. This is my constant prayer, my mantra, affirmation, reverberation, reiteration, and my ever-living reality. And it is crucial to the very foundation of my understanding, my teaching, my walk, and my work along this divine, all-blessed life path and journey. It is how I, the Divine Prince, make sense out of all that we are challenged with here in our daily existence on Mother, Father, Earth. And it is my personal place of power and understanding. The place from where I begin and the place from where I crystallize and realize all endeavors. Understanding that I and I alone create and co-create my divine destiny. And I alone create and co-create my divine reality. And so it is, Ashe. Today is Saturday, March 22nd, 2014, and I am emanating and vibrating with you and for you live, virtually, verbally, cosmically, quantum, universally, from the working temple of the House of the Divine Prince, Taya Mecca, Thai Potions, and Hoodoo Central here in this legendary, historic, and beautiful, enchanted city of New Orleans, Louisiana, the land of my ancestors and those who came before me along this spiritualist hoodoo Obeah life path and journey, passing down the great Obeah stick along with the knowledge of the healing, life-giving herbs, roots, plants, rituals, and minerals. I am, as always, truly honored, humbled, and appreciative of your continued listenership and support here of the Power Lunch, New Orleans Voodoo Secrets and Recipes here on Blog Talk Radio. And today I have a very special guest, Denise Alvarado, who will be present with us about 20, 25 after the hour. She will be present with us here live. She's going to help to fill in the gap, if you will. I still don't quite have all of my voice back from St. Joseph Night, so I needed a guest who was knowledgeable, who was recognizable, but who also could talk and share the history as well as the secrets of hoodoo, New Orleans hoodoo secrets and recipes here on Blog Talk Radio. So this will be a great show. I do have a few announcements I need to make. The first one is, I'm going to sort of give you an update and an announcement at the same time. We had a very, very wonderful carnival season this year here in New Orleans, 2014. It's my understanding it's probably one of the biggest, if not the biggest, carnival on record. Now, having said that, that is in spite of the insistent rain. And let me be clear, I did not ask for rain. All I prayed for was cold. All I asked for was coolness so that I could stay at a reasonable temperature inside my Mardi Gras Indian suit. I did not ask for rain. But Mami Wata keeps sending rain, keeps sending rain, keeps sending rain. And it may be because her image was embossed within the Queen Quet creation on the back of my suit. So that does add to why some people really believe that I have something to do with all this historic rain. We've never had to move Mardi Gras activities as much as we have this year because of the weather. Mardi Gras Day was, I believe, the coldest on record, or one of the coldest on record. I don't think it was quite the coldest, but I could be wrong about that. It may have been the coldest, but definitely was raining, rained all day. There are some videos available I've noticed on YouTube where those Indians who did brave the weather managed to get under Claiborne Bridge. But for the most part, many of the Indian gangs and tribes did not come out Mardi Gras Day. and reserved their creations and their artistry and their energy for St. Joseph's Day, which is March 19th every year. Very well-known Catholic Christian holiday. Denise Alvarado, I'm sure, will give you a little bit more meat to that buffet of what St. Joseph's Day is. But for me and for many locals here in New Orleans, separate from the Christian offerings for these saints, there's also this whole voodoo Indian thing going on. And we get lost in that, in Indian, bringing down ancestors and egguns and wearing our suits and parading in the street and still having buffets, still having libations, still having celebration, still being thankful for the blessings of the year. And typically this is done in a very smooth fashion from Mardi Gras into St. Joseph's Day, but the weather has played a key role this year. And as spiritualists, we cannot deny that. We cannot overlook that. We cannot ignore the signs as they come to us and speak to us through nature. So there's clearly something going on, some movement going on. Change is upon us, and often we must bend with change. We must evolve with change. So Super Sunday has already been postponed and rescheduled twice, and it is now being moved to March 30th, 2014, in A.L. Davis Park, where the Mardi Gras Indians historically parade and lay out their costumes and suits and give the community a more close-up opportunity to interact with them. So we are looking forward to Super Sunday again, March 30th, and also Super Sunday as it is held and celebrated on the West Bank, which I believe will be sometime in the month of April. So I'm going to take just a brief intermission, and I will be forward momentarily. Again, Denise Alvarado will be with us right about 20, 25 after the hour, and we will be forward with more hoodoo, New Orleans voodoo secrets and recipes here on Blog Talk Radio. All is a blessing. And let me say, my live listening and calling number is area code 347-215-8967, area code 347-215-8967. The phone lines are filling up, so you might want to get your call in now, but please do be patient with us. You might be on hold for a moment, but we are able to address each and every phone call at 347-215-8967. I will be forward. All is a blessing. Ashe.
Azunke parin legbahe, eh, azunke, azunke parin legbahe, parin legba me la jan kase washo, azunke, valre le parin vodou legba,
azunke parin legbahe,
eh, azunke,
azunke parin legbahe, parin legba la jan kase washo, azunke parin legbahe,
eh, azunke.
Parrain no vodou li, oui
Indeed, again, it is a blessed day. We have a very special guest with us today, Denise Alvarado, who will be sharing with us in New Orleans hoodoo, voodoo, secrets and recipes, New Orleans culture. And she will be with us in about 10 more minutes. But please ask your patience. I am very grateful for all of those who are already in representation. Area code 314, area code 860. Area code 240, area code 301, area code 213. I certainly appreciate each and every one of you for being present, for tuning in live with us here on Blog Talk Radio, and for awaiting the continuance of the show. I also want to thank all of my special friends and guests in the live chat. I can see you. I am talking to you. You are not responding back to me, but I can see you, Sherry, Jeff Keisha, all my special guests. Denise Alvarado, we certainly appreciate you for being present with us here on today. This will be a great show, and we hope to cover a great deal of material within the show. Of course, we want to build a platform, if you will, a foundation for understanding not only how hoodoo and voodoo came to be here in New Orleans, but I think some other topics that, as far as I know, only Denise and I more specifically tend to talk about, which is how the culture came to be, how it evolved here. And there are many pieces missing to the usual story that we're often given the vocation and responsibility of having to feel. So I would like to start with some history. We all sort of know about how the Louisiana Purchase and New Orleans and how all that sort of came together. But there's an aspect of that story that's undertold that we want to share today. And this landmass, which has become known as the city of New Orleans, was formed around 2200 B.C. when the Mississippi River deposited silt, creating the delta which we would now know as New Orleans. Before Europeans founded what will become known as the city of New Orleans, the area was inhabited by Native Americans, the Homans, just named one specific ethnic group, for about 1,300 years. The Mississippian cultured people built mounds and earthworks in this area. And some of those mounds still exist as far north that I know at southern Illinois. There may be some as far as Wisconsin, but I know for a fact that there are some of those mounds that are still in existence, are still visited, are still frequented in southern Illinois, just past, I believe, East St. Louis, Illinois. The bayou flows here into Lake Pontchartrain, and this became a very important trade route. I like to refer to it as the New York City of the South. There was no more mixed, no more cultured place than New York, than New Orleans of that time that we understand the creation and the birthing of the city to have taken place. Archaeological evidence has shown settlements have dated as far back as 400 A.D. here by the Native American culture. So there's a presence here in the land that far exceeds our history as New Orleans, as the city that we now know as New Orleans here on this land. And we stay connected to that center in Congo Square. As a matter of fact, I have one of my announcements was that there is a very special festival going on right now in Congo Square and for the duration of the weekend. This weekend is the Congo Square New World Rhythm Festival. It has already started. Luther and Jamil and the Congo Square Preservation Society started drumming at 11, and they should be in full swing of things now at Congo Square within the confines of Armstrong Park on Rampart Avenue here in New Orleans. And Congo Square assisted with the performance of Bombazo Dance Company from the Bronx, New York. You should be getting ready to go on stage right about now. I believe Bambula 2000 will also be performing. And this is a weekend event, so it will be held all day today and tomorrow in Congo Square, March 22nd. So 115 to 215 in Preservation Hall located within the park. They will also be giving a dance and music workshop by the Bombazo Dance Company from Bronx, New York City. So it will be a very special event. It is free and open to the public, and everybody is asked and invited to attend and to participate. But we know and understand Congo Square as a sacred space and a place where the enslaved Africans were allowed to drum, to dance, to in some way enact and be connected to their history, their past, where they had come from. Many of you don't know that we were not fed on Sundays. You didn't work on Sundays, so you were not fed on Sundays. So there was a need to gather in Congo Square to share food, to share what produce you were able to generate from your small crops. Some of us were allowed small crops here in New Orleans, which we fed ourselves with and began the tradition of vending and marketing that still today holds true and strong here in the city. So there's a deep spiritual vortex of energy, if you will, that is happening, that continues to happen, that is foundational to the city, that is rooted in Congo Square. And it is from there that much of our history, if you will, has been birthed. Jazz, Mardi Gras Indians, and many of these traditions. We're going to speak specifically today with Denise Alvarado about veneration of saints, which is cross-cultural. And we're going to also talk about Black Hawk, which is also cross-cultural. And I think because the history is missing, people do not have a complete understanding of the patchwork that makes these systems and these spirits work here in New Orleans. We've always been the crossroads, if you will. We talk about our French history, but we don't often talk about our Spanish history. And the two are deeply ingrained and deeply interrelated here in New Orleans and in all aspects of pop culture and subcultures and voodoo and jazz and music and performance and burlesque and all those things that are New Orleans. French explorers, French fur trappers and traders arrived in this area, it is said, around 1690, some making settlements among the Native American villages of Thatched Hut along the bayou. By the end of the decade, the French made an encampment called Port Bayou St. John near the head of the bayou. They built a small fort, St. John, at the mouth of the bayou in 1701, using as a base a large Native American shell midden dated back to the Muscoville culture. These early European settlements are now within the limits of the city of New Orleans, though predating its official date of founding. And many of these structures, this land, this earth, captures whole spirits. And that, in my personal opinion, plays a large role in why this vortex of voodoo and spiritual energy and Black Hawk and spiritualist churches and Mardi Gras traditions will never die here. And I am going to go to the phone line caller. Give me not even 60 seconds, area code 928. I'll be with you momentarily. And Denise, I believe, should be on the phone lines with us now also. And I'm going to bring her immediately into the conversation. But I just want to say this real quick before I get to the phone, that I believe that it plays this vortex of energy can never be removed. No amount of gentrification, no amount of storms, no amount of calamities of any kind, I believe, will ever be able to unsee that energy. That energy is here. And I'm sure if we do our research and we do our homework, there was probably a vortex of energy that existed here even before the indigenous people began to perform ceremonies and tap that energy here. So we want to talk about the veneration of saints as it is in the Catholic Church, as it is in the spiritual church, as it is in voodoo, as it is in Ifa, as it is in hoodoo, because all of those paths intersect and have a place here in our city, and they cannot be separated. And there are many attempts to divide the history, divide the community, divide the participants and the players in the ever-going promotion and practice of the city and traditions. And we want to talk about those things with you today. I'm going to go through the phone lines now. Area code 928. Who's calling and where are you calling from?
Hi, this is Denise.
Hey, Denise. Peace and blessings. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you. How are you?
I am a little bit tired, as to be expected. I'm still trying to get my voice back from St. Joseph. We had a great time. We really, really did. Mahmood and Sabrina, as always, were warm and hospitable. And the Yellow Pocahontas really set it off this year. And I am a little bit prejudiced, since I am the first ever masking witch doctor, voodoo man, medicine man with Yellow Pocahontas.
That's awesome.
It was wonderful. We had a large turnout. Villery was shut down. We've been blamed for shutting Treme down. We had food. We had drink. We had tourists. We had locals. We had the media. In fact, there is a posting of us on the New Orleans Advocate.com, Pocahontas, Yellow Pocahontas, Mardi Gras Indians, and also another spread on NOLA.com, Yellow Pocahontas, Mardi Gras Indians Celebrate St. Joseph Day. So we were out there, and we were colorful. Oh, we were so colorful and so beautiful. It was amazing. It was amazing.
That's how you do it.
How do you do it? Spirit. Man, that's a great question. Spirit. There's no other way to do it. Once you get past, you know, being committed to doing it, once you get past wanting to do it, once you get past being able to afford doing it, once you get past, you know, creating the suit, sewing the suit, the pain associated with the suit, once you get past being pricked with the needle the 300th time, the 500th
right.
time, the 1,000th time, it has to be deeper than love. It has to be deeper than tradition. It's deeper than spirit even for me. And,
yeah.
and I often spend that time, you know, months in isolation, not being able to fulfill my daily schedule, not being able to eat on schedule, not being able to sleep on schedule, not being able to do really anything but sew. And it allows your left brain to sort of do what it does and focus on the beading and focus on the design. But your right brain, your spirit brain, is really allowed to travel. And it is in that space that I call on Black Hawk, that I call on the saints, that I call on the spirits, that I call on the ancestors. I beg them. I plead with them. You know, I talk to them like regular people. I can't do this if y'all don't do it. You know, you got to do it for me. You got to show me what to do. Even in the creative process as an artist, and you are an artist as well in your own right, you know, you reach blocks sometimes and you need spirit to tell you what to do, you know,
absolutely.
What direction, what form to take, what method to take. And when that's not done, it shows up on the street. It shows up in ceremony.
Right.
So there's a lot of pressure to get it done, and not outside pressure. You know, if you don't do it, if you don't come out, you know, people are out for those who are out, and they don't often look for those who are not there. But you and your commitment to spirit and the vocation and to the meaning behind it is what you're riding on. There's no other way to explain it. There's no other humanly, you know, possible way to explain putting yourself through that and,
right.
and doing it every year. You know that some of these Indians have been masking, you know, 20 years, 30
mm-hmm.
years, you know, a great deal of their lives since childhood. And it's quite an undertaking. It's quite an undertaking. To be able to say that without having done it is one thing. But to really do it and to sew and not to have any help sewing, because I didn't have any help sewing, I've been asked that a lot because they see it as being a lot of work, and it was a lot of work. I started on Queen Quet 2 years ago.
Right.
And you were one of those special people who knew that.
Yeah.
Along the
yeah.
way, I sent pictures, secret videos. You know, I wanted
right.
to document
right.
the process so that people would be able to, yeah, he did it. You know, I saw it, you know, every step of the way.
I got to tell you, your beading is phenomenal. It's just amazing to me. I mean, I know how stressed out you were for a while there, just, you know, trying to make sure you got everything done in time. But it's just beautiful. You're beautiful. You are definitely pretty.
And now I'm addicted. Oh, my goodness. I can't shut it down now, you know. I've
right.
already started it to the next 2 years. I've already started on my patches for the next 2 years. And I don't mean just have them in design. I don't mean just on paper. I mean they're in frames. They're on canvas. Some of them already have beads in them. The journey has begun. It's a vocation. And I see it as an extension of the voodoo. And I want to talk about that today because I don't think any person is better qualified to address this than you. And you can address it from both sides of the fence, as someone born and raised in Louisiana, as someone who's now been marked with the outsider mark. You know, I've
right.
been marked with the outsider right. mark. You know, where did he come from? When did he show up? You know, who is he to represent? Who is he to do? And we've been there, you know. We've both been monitoring each other's progress, but also the progress of the community from a multidimensional perspective. So I think there are many things that we can talk about right now. in the remaining portion of these 2 hours. And we have callers online who are chomping at the bit, of course. And we want to reach each and every one of you, so we're going to ask you to please, please be patient with us. And know that you can always go back and archive, and you will hear every bit of the show. You'll be able to share the show with your friends and your family and critics and supporters. But we're gonna talk about it today. Me and Denise do this a lot in private, so we've been wanting to do this in public, and it needs to be done. There are many interests right now in not only New Orleans, but in voodoo, in spirituality, and for many reasons. And some of those agendas are good, and some of those agendas may not necessarily be good. And I'm not one who's adverse to agenda. Agenda is a part of the process. If you don't have a plan, if you don't have an agenda, you're basically spinning your wheels and you're allowing life to happen around you. I feel that way politically. I feel that way in terms of education, self-education. I feel that way in terms of spiritual journey. Many of us are waiting on our pastors and our parishes and our priests and the spiritualists and the hoodoos and the voodoos to do all the work. And you critique and you complain and you send me and Denise and others dirty emails and make ugly videos about us. And all the while, we keep doing the work.
Right.
We keep doing the, you know, at the end of the day, we keep doing the work. And I don't profess, and I'm sure you don't either, but I don't profess any control, any power, any authority, any leadership over what anybody else does. I barely have time to handle mine. And now with Masking Indian and all that comes with that, I really don't have time now for my own extra, we're going to call it stuff, let alone extra stuff. So it's really about getting the work done. It's just like voting. It's just like politics. You have those who vote. You have those who are active in the political structure of the community. You have those who are at the planning meeting. You have those who were there to discuss the tearing down of Claiborne Bridge. You have those who were at the Armstrong, Friends of Armstrong Park committee meetings, who were heard, who spoke their piece, who made their presence known. And then you have those in the community who, excuse my French, bitch, whine, and complain, and don't do anything. And no matter what is done, are going to whine and complain, while the activists, I like activists, I'm an activist, an activist requires doing something. It requires more than just talking. It requires being active. It requires documenting, and I appreciate your documenting, because that's often not happening. We talk about what's happening, you know, we talk afterwards about what happened. But very few of us are committed to the documenting and making that documentation available, you know, so we know who the active participants are. So I'm going to step back just a little bit and allow you to talk. As we get hands raised at 347-215-8967, you will need to raise your hand, and you do that by pressing a number 1. On your telephone keypad, and we will more than happy address each and every one of your questions and comments. I think I have maybe 2 more spaces open on the phone line right now at 347-215-8967. So at some point, if you realize you're not going to have a question or a comment, please listen to us online or listen to us in chat and allow somebody who wants to speak to have that chair. We certainly appreciate that. All is a blessing. So Denise, first I want you to just tell us again who you are. I think it's important that you do that. You're often sharing the information. You're often sharing the knowledge. But I think you need to toot your horn. I think you need to tell people who you are, where you come from, why this is relevant to you, why you have a right to say what you say, And of course, I'm being a little facetious. I'm speaking for some of the, you know, the folks that we both know who have so much to say. And we invite you to call in as well. You know, we're not scared. You know, we invite you to call in as well if you feel you know you have something to say. But I want to allow Denise to speak her piece and to first introduce herself, and then we will get into the history and then the veneration of saints and, of course, Black Hawk and why that's so important to us this time of year.
Well, thank you so much, first off, for asking me to come chat with you today about this. I could say this topic, but there's like multiple layers of topics within this topic of the spirits, the indigenous spirits, native spirits that are present in New Orleans, in Louisiana, and who have been there for as long as we know. I just think this is an aspect of conjure and New Orleans voodoo that is much misunderstood, and very little is really shared about it, and for good reason. But yeah, I guess I should back up. My name is Denise Alvarado, and I was born and raised in New Orleans. And I lived there for, 35, 40 years before I moved out west. And my personal path has been a multicultural one that is pretty much consistent with my ethnic background. I'm one of those people. I'm Creole, so I'm not here or there. I'm kind of in everywhere. And it's kind of always been like that for me, you know, just trying to make my way and find my place. And I think that's a challenge for people with, you know, multiracial, multi-ethnic backgrounds, finding your place and being comfortable with that place. And that's definitely a process, you know, that you go through over time. I grew up with one foot in the bayou and one foot in the city. My grandmother and my family on my mother's side lived in Mississippi, and we used to go there every weekend and, you know, hang out and play along the bayous, and that's where I had my first really formal introduction to the spirits by my aunt, who is a spiritualist and Baptist, I believe. But she's the one who really taught me at a very, very young age how to connect to spirit, how to call on them, and how to, using candles, basically, and with seance, how to communicate with the spirit world. So I was really chosen at a very, very young age, 5 or 6 years old is my first memory of that. You know, spirit's been showing themselves in my life for ever since, and in a multitude of ways. You know, working roots, my grandmother worked, you know, was always out digging up things. My mom was very good in the garden, and they taught me a lot about just basic things. You know, we didn't call what we did anything. It's just a way of life. You know, now, and it was, you know, growing up and becoming an adult, you know, you look over things now, and now people are putting labels on things. And that's kind of a process of discovery, too, because other people label what you lived. And
exactly.
Then, mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And then it's like finding out, oh, okay, so this is what we always did. And you're calling that, you know, hoodoo, you're calling that root work. Well, okay, you know, and then it starts to all kind of come together and make sense. And then, of course, as some, you know, I got my education in anthropology and psychology, and so learning to think in that way and learning to organize my life experiences along with my research and making it make sense, and then figuring out a way to disseminate that information because, you know, we and you and I have talked about this before, but our way of life has been, in recent years, well, I guess historically too, but in recent years it's been redefined and described by people who are not from the tradition, and that's not always a bad thing. You know, somebody's got to tell the story.
That's right.
And you know what I mean? And so that's cool. But, if, you know, my concern was just that there's accurate information being given out, and what does that mean, accurate information? For me, that means information coming from the horse's mouth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's there, if we can talk to each other, if we can relay stories of our elders, that's what we should do. And the other stuff, you know, the observers, they can record and report their experiences too. But nothing is a substitute for the primary source. And for so many people who are going back, wanting to learn their roots and not having roots and so reaching for other people's roots, you know, we owe it to them and we owe it to everybody to tell the story as we lived it, as we see it. And the stories are, you know, are just, there's many stories. My story is different than your story, is different than, you know, my grandmother's story, is different than my next door neighbor's story. But you'll find in the primary telling of that story a lot of commonalities. And the blending of red and black is one of those commonalities. And that story needs to be told. And
it's
so
very undertow. I'm sorry, I jumped in on you.
Okay.
It needs to be told, but what has been told is so corrupted and,
yes,
and so permeated with that Hollywood red man, black man, white man, Indian thing, that many are really confused about what the truth is.
Right.
I was chatting with a younger person yesterday about, you know, reggae and Bob Marley and the Buffalo Soldier and, you know, very popular song, very jazzy rhythm, but we don't process that through. We're talking about very specially trained, you know, black men who were sent to kill indigenous brothers and sisters, you know, many times who we were related to, blood related to. So that story has been divided, as is the American story. Divided,
right,
you know, by race, by ethnicity, and who's telling the story, and what is their agenda, and, you know, what aspects of the story are they trying to promote and make good, and what aspects of the story are they sort of toning down. And that makes that process much more complicated in understanding us and knowing us and understanding and being able to act adequately and accurately interpret the history. And as you said, if you don't ask us, if we're not given that opportunity, you know, to speak for ourselves, then who else can? Who else can bring clarity to that story? I, like you, am Creole. So people look at me, and they look at you, and they say, well, wait a minute. You know, my grandmother, my father's grandmother, my great-grandmother, was 100% Cherokee. I have photos of her. They're on my Facebook wall. All my grandparents on both sides look obviously indigenous American, but they look also obviously African.
Right.
But what you don't see is the Irish. You know, you don't see the other elements that are within our family. And and through political reasons, those various diverse elements get chopped away. And each family does it in a different way. I know we have family members in our family who live right next door to my grandmother for years, and we called them Miss and by their first name, Miss Lucille, and we just thought that was the white neighbor. Until after they died and we found out that we were actually related to them, and they were passing. That was my first experience of what passing was and what passing meant.
Right. Passe blanc.
Right. Masking Indian has a passing history to it. People don't understand that. If you were escaping slavery and you went out into that unknown bayou and intermingled with the Native Americans, you were passing as Indian. Okay, and we had to mask for survival. It's
right.
Not celebration. It's not the party that we see it as today. This was something that came out of survival. And I'm sure you would agree hoodoo came out of survival. It is often referred to as a bastardization of voodoo, which I've never accepted that, but more a survival path of voodoo.
I agree. Absolutely. I mean, you know, and if we listen to our elders and the stories that they tell, and if we, you know, tease through the history and for the truth, we'll see how hoodoo, working roots, was a primary line of defense between slaves and slave owners and, you know, as surviving, like you said. And the knowledge that our ancestors had, if without that knowledge, the colonizers wouldn't even be here. You know, it was the knowledge of the medicine that the Indians and Africans held, you know, that they were turned to for healing. Because even, you know, it was acknowledged that the medicine that they knew worked. And the white folks, the European folks, they didn't know, you know, they weren't familiar with the local plants and roots and things like that, the local medicine. Which one thing that gets me too with regards to that particular issue is there is the belief that I've, you know, observed at least on the internet quite a bit that the Africans came here without any knowledge of the plants and whatnot, and they didn't know anything about it, and they learned everything from the Native Americans, but that's just not true. There was a lot of plants and things that came from Africa to New Orleans, and the Africans brought that knowledge with them. So there's always an exchange of information. And, you know, there was an exchange there, and that's part of, I think, you know, the root of hoodoo too, or root doctoring anyway. Was the exchange of that information, how these roots were used, you know, in both contexts, and then finding a common one that worked here in the situation that both populations found themselves in. Because, you know, natives were slaves too. They were slaves here before Africans got here and thrown together. They were all thrown together and, you know, had to find some common ground. And that's a beautiful thing. I mean, really, when you think about it, being able to find some common ground and find a way to survive.
My family was a part of the Gullah Geechee Nation. Of course, mixed at some point with the Seminoles and those indigenous people,
right.
And were a part of the Trail of Tears, and that's how they ended up in Mississippi and Louisiana on their way to Oklahoma. So it's a very diverse history, and you have to know more than one thing. You can't, you know, sort of siphon out one singular path to make sense of it if you're going to clearly and truly make any sense of it at all. I think another misinterpretation, not only did the Africans bring their herbs and their knowledge, they brought their gods and their spirits.
Yes.
And history has been misinterpreted as being a Haitian story. And true, we give reverence to Haiti for sort of revival, bringing a revival of voodoo, bringing even some sense of order and structure to voodoo. They were able to practice out in the open where we were always forced to be in hiding. So they were able, like the Cubans, to develop systems out in the open that are a little bit more organized. And Haiti did bring that, but the voodoo was already here.
Exactly.
The worship in the Island of the Snake was already here.
Yep.
So we need to reinforce that while we do our broadcast. I also want to invite all our listeners to participate. You know, this is a participatory show. We do see some activity in the chat, and it is hard to chat and type at the same time. So please chat, chat users, don't feel neglected. I'm reading and trying to respond to you as I can. And those who are on the phone lines, we invite you to press number one when you are ready with your question, comment, or request. I'm here on Blog Talk Radio for myself or Denise Alvarado. All is a blessing. So I wanted to talk more specifically about our specific path or brand, if you will, of voodoo here in New Orleans. And I think there are some unique specifics that are ours and do have some originating birthplaces in other cultures, other traditions, but have sort of become ours and set us apart, if you will, from the West African variety of voodoo and the Haitian variety of voodoo. And I think one of those things is the veneration of saints. Now, we know that, you know, there is a amalgamation, if you will, in the Latin world, South American communities, in terms of Santeria, Lokomi, and the blending of Catholic saints with those deities. But I think here in New Orleans, we take that even to another level. And I think a great deal of what hoodoo is built around the veneration of saints. And
right.
I would like you to talk a little bit about that. You've done many articles about that I've found and done some research with on the Internet. And I'd like to hear you talk about that a little bit.
Well, you're right. That is one of the things that does set us apart from other brands of voodoo and hoodoo. And, you know, the part of that that people don't realize, too, is that that was also the result of a survival mechanism. And I'm just in awe at the ingenuity of our ancestors to be able to take such a horrendous situation and turn it into something that worked for them. And, you know, I don't think – it's amazing to me – let me just back up a minute – but it's amazing to me how many people have not ever heard of the Louisiana Black Code and how so many people talk and teach about hoodoo, and none of them touch on that at all. And that is just, like, so important. Then how Catholicism came to be such an integral part of voodoo and hoodoo in New Orleans. Because it wasn't a choice. It wasn't something that just kind of happened. It was a forced phenomenon.
And that's an important distinction to make. I'm sorry, I cut in. That's a very important distinction to make because we know that the Catholic Church made an agreement in South America to allow people to continue to practice their African-based traditions alongside with Catholicism, and there was a certain level of open embracement there.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with the Black Code here, like you said, we had to come to that crossroad under duress.
Right, right. And they did, you know. They made sense of it in observing, you know, the different saints and their characteristics and being able to relate them to the African deities and spirits. And most, if not all, of the similarities between the spirits and the saints is very superficial. You know, it was just enough that St. Peter held the keys to the gates of heaven to associate him with Papa Legba, who is the gatekeeper to the spirit world. there's nothing else that's, you know, that's similar between the two. But it's enough, and it was enough to serve as a mask for the religion, the African religions, to continue, to persist. And so, you know, over time, though, it became because I think the other thing that people seem to not understand very well is the concept of syncretism, where the saint that's associated with the Lua or the Orisha is one and the same, but that's not the case. They're only stand-ins. They're associated with. They're not the same. But they stood in for this particular African spirit when they had to, because it was a safe way of being able to continue the devotion. And so they served a function, and syncretism is a functional dynamic that happens. And without it, you know, the religion wouldn't have continued in the way that it has. So, yeah, you know, they would find elements of Catholicism, namely the saints, that were similar in some level to the different spirits, and knew that they could have an image of that particular saint up and be able to appear as though they were worshiping, or, you know, the saint itself, and you and I know that's not the case, and no one was ever confused as to who they were serving. Now, over time, they got to know the saints too, and know the saints as separate spirits, and so, and that's the thing about New Orleans, just culture in general, is it's very inclusive. And it's very, and again, I think that's a very functional dynamic that happens, you know, to be able to embrace cultural elements from different peoples and have it be part of the religion itself, part of the culture, you know.
If I can, I think it's important also to note that it was not just a Catholic thing, as you see in the Latin world. I was amazed, because I grew up in a very different part of the South, in Maryland, and I came here in the late 80s. But I was amazed when I first went to a black spiritualist church, Baptist church, and saw Catholic saints lined around the wall. Because you don't see that in Pentecostal churches. You don't see that in evangelical churches. You don't see that in traditionally in the Baptist churches. And that's
right.
Where I guess that synchronism became most obvious to me, that there was something else happening here, something much deeper going on, and that there was a code language being both sung as well as acted out religiously. And I want to talk about that, too. Some of that code language spills into our discussion about Black Hawk and Mardi Gras Indians.
Mm-hmm.
I also want to go to the phone lines now. We have a hand raised here from area code 813. Who's calling and where are you calling from?
Hello, this is Dr. G. Love.
Peace and blessings. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
All is a blessing. We certainly appreciate your calling in. Did you have a question or a comment?
Yeah, I do have a comment. One thing I want to say, I was feeling you on the identity of being an activist, and I've been activated in New Orleans as a healer and community member for over 10 years, and have had the pleasure of working. So many people, including our Mardi Gras Indians. And one place that I feel people can be active is a place that, you know, has been activated by so many different facets of the community. It's activated each year during the Ma'afa. It's activated during individual ceremonies that various people throughout the area make. And it happens right over there at St. Augustine's Church at the Tomb of the Unknown Slave. And I want to share with anyone who's feeling like, how can I be active, that going to that tomb, which is such a sacred site, and connecting with the ancestors with the intention that you mentioned earlier, having an agenda, is really a portal. It's a place where we can do that work. Some of the work that I've done there over the years with groups of people has been to hold space for the transmutation of spirits that are ready now to cross over to the other side for whatever reason, because their people, their descendants are now awakening and doing the work. And so I would just want to really say that I find that to be a beautiful location to allow that transmutation of spirit to happen. There's so much intense, locked, sometimes angry, sometimes deeply distressed energy of specific ancestor spirits that move out there. And it is right there next to a Catholic church, and it has this amazing syncretization with the saints, Orisha, Loa, ancestors, and highly recommended. It's a way to be active without necessarily having to move in the zone of politics.
I absolutely agree.
It's a great idea.
I support that. Yeah, absolutely. And we often acknowledge, you know, the cemeteries and various other places in the city, and that is a often overlooked spiritual vortex location. And I am a part, I'm sure you know, of the My Alpha that we do every year, and we make that a critical stop on the journey. Also, many of the Mardi Gras Indian masking tribes also make that a part of the journey. And we must hold on to that, particularly in the face of change. And change has many dimensions to it. I'm not, you know, reinforcing the negative or the positive, but we are faced with change right now, particularly in that area, Treme. The streetcar is about to come right down Rampart. So let's not, you know, be naive. That it's going to greatly affect those communities on both sides of the track, and we need to make sure that we keep our sacred spaces. We honor Congo Square. We honor the cemeteries. Let's not forget St. Augustine. Let's not forget the Tomb of the Unknown Slave. Dr. G, that was a great point. I couldn't agree with you more.
And if I could just add something to that, I think that's just a wonderful suggestion for people. And I think that, you know, it's really important for us to continue to pray for the ancestors, because, you know, we've got this historical trauma going on that is evidenced in how people treat each other today and the many social problems that we're facing in the communities. You know, when people were killed and murdered, both Indians and Africans and their descendants, there was no time for them to activate their own inherent healing mechanisms. You know, there was no time for grieving. And so we've got generation upon generation of people who died traumatic deaths with no healing. And so what we do when you go and honor a specific sacred place, and when you pray for the ancestors, you're helping them, you're helping to elevate them and move them on. And you're also helping to heal the present. Soul wound is what it was, is how I was taught about it. It's that deep, deep longing, that deep pain that there's no words to describe, that us today have that emptiness. We have that. We've been touched by that soul wound. And so I just think that that's just a great way to start and to participate in the healing of the peoples.
Okay. And you've just come to the circle on the activism again, Ashe, because I believe that a great deal of what is happening right now with the killing and the violence and this growing rape thing, which really has me alarmed, is that we are neglecting the spirit. and you can live anywhere on the globe and neglect spirits and have that come back on you. But I think to do it in such a place of vortex of energy such as this, it is magnified. It is heightened. And we have to go back to doing ceremony. We have to go back to doing ritual for the sake of ritual. Mm-hmm. The performance is great. Tourism is great. Commercialism is great. You know, promotion, marketing, I'm for all of that. But we have got to take spirit and ancestral worship more seriously. And that is one of my goals for those who are listening, who are local, who might be a little bit confused about what I'm trying to do. Everything that I do has a reason, everything. There should be no secret about that. I have an agenda, okay? But the bottom line for me is if I can just get us to acknowledge ancestors and make that a normal, everyday, active part of our lives, the way we do so many other things in our society and take for granted, that alone will move the spirit vibration in our communities into a place where we can have more effective healing, we can get a better grip on the violence, we can get a better grip on our young people, we can get a better grip on ourselves. And many were already suffering, but I've seen an intensification of that suffering post-Katrina. A lot of PTSD, undiagnosed, untreated, a lot more mental health. And I'm seeing it younger and younger and younger with the mental health, 17, 18, 19, 20, when they should be at the prime of their lives, when they should be at school, when they should be, you know, employed, when they should be building businesses, and they can't get their minds together. So Dr. G, I certainly appreciate that contribution. And please stay with us and continue with us in the conversation. I'm going to open line here. Area code 312. Who's calling and where are you calling from?
Hi, everyone. This is Keisha calling from Chicago. And this is more of a comment. Okay. And this is more of a comment because I'm so glad you all are bringing up spirit and spirit healing in reference to the violence that we are experiencing on the streets. I live here on the west side of Chicago, and, you know, for the last couple of years they've been calling this Chi-Rock. And I've been always feeling that there is some need of transmutation of some spirit work that needs to go on in these streets because of the traumatic deaths that these babies are experiencing. And there's nothing in the way of spirit work or intense spirit work that is being done after these murders. So I'm just wondering if we can go a little bit more deeper into that.
Absolutely. And I'm going to give everybody an opportunity. Denise is going to speak. Dr. G is going to speak. I want to sort of go first. I absolutely agree with that because, and this is not a slight. This is not a judgment on the churches. This is not a judgment on the Catholic temples, on the mosque. But I think they have gotten a little settled into a more philosophical, political position. And they're not really being activists. When they knock on my door, I ask, where's your work program? I ask, where's your shelter? I ask, where's your food in your clothing closet? You know, I ask, where's your program for young mothers? I ask, where's your bringing ex-offenders back into society? And when they cannot answer that, I thank them, and I ask them to do their homework and come back again. You know, I don't care, Jehovah's Witness, whoever it is, because at the end of the day, all of our spiritual knowledge, power, ashe, initiations, is nothing if we cannot activate that in the street, if we can't apply that at the community level, if we can't apply that at the grassroots level. You know, I'm often asked, well, what do voodoo have to do with politics? You don't know the story of Marie Laveau. Study that story and re-ask me that again. It says something when the real hoodoo show up at City Hall. It says something when they know that it's not a photo op. You know, we might be doing some work, and we must do the work now. And we must move away from the fear of being open about that. There was the black code. There was a time when we had to hide these practices. There was a time when we had to whisper Black Hawk. I remember a time when you couldn't say Black Hawk out loud. Not around black people, not uptown. Immediately the association was made with voodoo. You're talking that voodoo stuff, and the conversation would be over. So we've got to move back to that. And I'm not a person who has an issue with fear. You know, Hollywood has played around with fear and voodoo, has toyed with fear and voodoo. I personally don't have an issue with that. If you're not right, you should fear the voodoo. If you're bringing harm to our communities, to our babies, to our women, you should fear the voodoo. And I live for that day to come again, that we are feared out of respect and that people would do righteous things and make right decisions for respect of ancestors, for respect of spirit, ultimately for respect of self. Because when we trace these paths back, even masking, even skull and bones, even baby dolls, and we take that all back to Agun societies in West Africa, to ancestral societies, to other secret societies that enforced law, that enforced justice, that enforced morality, there's no separation there. We should be doing that. And I think we have allowed commercialism. Commercialism has its place. But then when you are in the, second poorest state in the union, high unemployment, many people here are not carrying the education that gets them the income that they deserve, are not carrying the skills that gets them the income they deserve, or do have those skills, craftsmen, artists, musicians, performers, even customer service. Customer service is a high art and a skill. And it takes somebody with that level of training, and they should be paid for that. And we live in a minimum wage environment. So you're forcing your best to have to decide between feeding my family, paying my bills, and doing what's right by community, by culture, and by tradition. So Keisha, you also are right on the money in terms of drawing a direct correlation between violence, chickens coming home to roost, as Malcolm X called it, and
right.
Us not doing what we're supposed to do spiritually. And going full circle back to the churches, the mosques, the temples, you're not doing it all. You're not doing your fullness. Because at the end of the day, if you have no spiritual power, if you can't wield that, if you cannot organize that to affect change in the community, then it's all vanity. And that's why our children lose respect for religion, lose respect for tradition. Not only do they not understand it, they're not seeing it being demonstrated, and what aspects of it they are seeing demonstrated of it are either comical or offensive. You know, the scandals and you know, the frauds, and they don't see the real spiritualist every day. So every acting job I take, every performance I do, every time I'm in Congo Swear, every time I'm in a voodoo ceremony, every time I'm in an Ifa ceremony, every time I'm seeing a client, every time I step out of my house, every time I'm masked Indian, I'm representing voodoo. If people want clarity about my agenda. And right with that is the spirits and the ancestors. And we need to do more of that. You know, we've done protesting, we've done marching, and we need to keep doing that. We do voting, and we need to keep doing that. But it's time now that we begin to bring these indigenous and these African and these traditional sciences of religion and spirituality out into the open, out into the forefront, and actively work against these issues in our community. And Ogu is underfed. Ogu is neglected and is demanding blood, and it's coming from our children. Even the Bible talks about generational sins. generational curses, things not being worked out, being swept under the carpet and being passed on to the next generation and the next generation. And then that generation becomes the next group of parents, the next group of leaders, the next group of demonstrators, if you will. And so what do they see? They see people making a lot of money doing ungodly things. They see people making a lot of money doing unrighteous things. And they see us sort of doing our spirituality and religion either for ourselves or for a small group of people or in quiet somewhere or in isolation. And we don't need to hide anymore. That needs to come out, and our children need something to hold on to. And these societies, if you will, have built in them the initiations, the coming of age, you know, all the ceremonies that affect, you know, childbirth, coming of age, marriage, death, if you will, aging, all the different things that we have to deal with every day, you know, but we're not giving them the fullness of our ashe, and we're not bringing that together. I tend to overtalk. I know it, and I'm going to shut it down and allow somebody else to speak. But I'm going to say just one more thing. I'm still a little disturbed that there's no real working voodoo temple in this town. And if I had my way and I had the credit and I had the money, I would have one, and it would be open to everybody, the Pilos, the Sangomas, the Ifas, the Lokomis, but we don't have a sacred space here. When I look at this rain and the Mardi Gras Indians and this continued move of Super Sunday, where is your teepee? Where is your land? We also have a space where we can come together and have some shelter over our head in the event of inclement weather. So we're not doing our homework. Go ahead, Gail.
Ashe. This is G Love, Dr. G Love again. I want to address Keisha and say I have, again, as a lifetime spiritual activist, I got action. So here's an action that we did in 2000 with a group of sisters called Blacks Photo Cocoon at the time. We got a copy of the police report for our uptown neighborhood, which is where we were all residing at that time, and that was during a time of great gentrification. Massive amount of gang violence and a lot of babies' blood was shed in the streets. Ogun got his due, unfortunately, in that way. And we got a copy of that police report, and we printed out a map of our neighborhood, and we plotted out the different locations where there had been a death from a violent crime. We then gathered ourselves, put ourselves in white, brought our spiritual instruments, and most importantly, our own spirits. And we stood in circle and performed ceremony all day. We did it on a summer solstice in 2000. We performed all day at the different locations and raised that vibration and honored what happened there. And it was a very powerful experience, and it's the sort of thing that will potentially draw in your community members, and that kids would come and join in, because it's something that everybody can get around. It doesn't frighten them or make them feel that you're off the map, because you're doing this work where the blood has been shed in their own community. So I just want to share that as one example of a way to really just get out there with or without any resources. You don't need much to just get out there and go for raising those spirits.
Ashe. Denise, did you want to comment? Keisha?
Yeah, I just I think that, again, that's a great idea, because what you're doing is you're modeling for you know, the younger generation, and not even just the younger generation, but other people who just have been sheltered or are kept from tradition. You know, you're showing them how it can be how it's a beautiful thing, and how it's the inherent foundation is healing. And it, you know, puts it in a perspective that it's not frightening. It's something that it's very relatable. And I think that, you know, the government's done a very good job of producing generations of people who have no direction in terms of tradition, especially with regards to Native American people. policies in place to where we have generations of people who have no idea how to parent because they were taken from their parents and raised in boarding schools and, you know, stripped of their culture. So part of our job, those of us who are able to learn, be exposed to, and practice, is to reintroduce or introduce for the first time these traditions that we have. I just think there's a lot of lack of knowledge, and it's not really everybody's fault, in a sense. You know, I mean, I think it just hasn't been available. And with the social climate in the South, it was not safe and has not been safe to come out and be open about being a voodoo practitioner or hoodoo. You know, it's been a recent thing from my perspective where it's now becoming more acceptable and people can come out and say who they are and what they do. But certainly when I was growing up in the 60s, it was not safe to come out and say, I'm into voodoo, you know, or I worship the voodoo spirits. That's not the way it was, you know. I know for me, it has actually been a coming out experience in terms of religion and spirituality because I did have to keep it oppressed for a long time, and I'm sure I'm not the only one, you know, in this conversation who's experienced something like that, but just speaking from my own, you know, personal perspective and experience. So I think, you know, one of the other ways that, well, for me, one of the ways that I've been able to help pass on some of the teachings is to implement policies in institutional settings. So, for example, I was able to develop some cultural-specific programs in hospitals and treatment centers where we had our indigenous healing traditions as legitimate healing modalities part of that treatment. As an option for the individual. So if a person who is in treatment for substance abuse, you know, they didn't have to just go talk to somebody one-on-one in therapy. They could actually come out in the sweat lodge and do, you know, with their families. And I can tell you as a person who has received that that ceremony officially, formally, that I've been able to take people in one ceremony what it would have taken 6 months to a year in formal Western therapy. The healing that can happen when people are in touch and have the opportunity to participate in their ancestral traditions is just it's so powerful. It's very difficult to put into words. And that's difficult because you have to, you know, we have to make a case for why our traditions are legitimate, you know. And that's been very difficult for me. Part of my frustrations has been, you know, why do we have to prove our traditions are legitimate? I mean, who, you know, compared to what? And that's just been a big problem. And, you know, that people compare they compare everything to the Western model, whether it be religion, you know, medicine, politics, whatever. It's all based on a very biased model. And so I think part of that process of changing things is educating people on that as well.
Speaking to that coming out, and this is Keisha again, like having the safety, and I feel like there's a safety net in which I had to travel to New Orleans to get so that I could feel comfortable in practicing any spirit work or trying to delve into that. Here up north, I don't feel like I have that sort of community, like I have to travel to get that community, and it's in pockets where I feel like, there in New Orleans, it was all around. It was in Congo Square. It was in my circle that I traveled in with the great Dr. G. Love and interacted with all the time. And here I have to really, like, consciously put in an effort to be in that safe and sacred space. So I don't know if I am necessarily all the way comfortable in doing that work here in Chicago yet. I'm still kind of getting my footing in the door. I'm just a baby. I'm still growing in it. So
yeah, and even today, coming out is not. I mean, I've undergone so much public abuse. It's not even funny. And I don't blame people who don't want to come out and be public, because a lot of people have to undergo the same kind of treatment, fighting their way to be themselves. And we've talked about that before many times, you know, Ty, about how, you know, people are so quick to judge and persecute instead of just tending to their own backyards, you know.
And it's still quite taboo. You know, let me chime in for what's today, March 22nd, 2014, it is still taboo. Now, it is acceptable to be seen as a commercial tourist voodoo.
Mm-hmm.
But when you say, I take voodoo seriously, voodoo is my religion, voodoo is my lifestyle, that is still seen as a taboo thing. People still cross themselves when they walk past my house. Some people cross the street when they walk past my house. Little children do not cuss in front of my house. And if I'm standing in the door, grown folks, 50, 60, will apologize if they say something, you know, derogatory in my presence. So I think that's a sign that there is still that fear. And as I stated earlier in the show, I don't discourage fear. If it's going to cause you to respect me, fear me. But at the same time, I do think there is, as Denise just suggested, an opening. There is a little bit more freedom now to say and to do in a public space than before. But in my experience, in terms of the actual practice, people still sort of expect you to be, you know, one thing before the camera and something else behind closed doors. And when they get to my house or see me on a daily basis or run into me at the post office and I got a chicken foot and a bottle of Florida water in my hand, you know, they know that I'm serious. And it's not something that I put on for the Internet. I think the Internet still provides a space where people can sort of look to be something. And you still sort of question, okay, well, is it, you know, that's a nice picture, but is that really who they are in real life? And I think myself, Dr. G, Keisha, all of us who are active in the social media have really opened our private lives in some ways to expose that this is who we are. This is how we live. It's not a performance per se. It is not a look. It's a lifestyle. And I think that will only further the overall acceptance of it if we would just be a little bit more aggressive. Don't be fearful, Keisha. You know, I'm born from Chicago. I have brothers and sisters still in Chicago. And we didn't have a chance to really get into the history, but all the hoodoo and the voodoo traveled upriver, okay?
All right.
The history of it through Memphis all the way to Chicago. So the hoodoo and the spiritualist churches and the voodoo have always been there. They're just still hiding. And they are going to be put off a little bit when you start wearing a little bit more white. And you start wrapping up your head a little bit more than usual. You know, I for a while put an altar on my front porch. And that's breaking them in. That's breaking them in hard. You know, and it invited questions. Let me tell you why I did it. There had been a theft. Don't steal my plants. Okay, my plants are going to be either edible or ritual herbs. I don't, you know, I'm not against pretty plants, but my plants are for usage. I take that personally. So I didn't clown. I didn't do the south side, west side, shoot 'em up. I put an altar on my porch, and it shut down the stealing. It did get some folks to, you know, stay away from me who probably should have been staying away from me. But it did get some folks to ask questions, both children as well as older people who wanted to know. And older people are very, very funny in a way because they know what they're looking at. And they'll tell you, oh, yeah, I remember this, and my grandmama used to do, and my aunties and them used to do, but they're very quiet about it. So I think it's the time, it's the season for us to be more aggressive, for us to be more visible. There are a lot of forces at work right now. Some people are happy with, some people are not. You know, changes in marriage, changes in gun laws. You know, many things are going through a change right now. Start the show with that. Watch nature. Yeah. Watch the sign. Super Sunday ain't never been moved around this much before. Mardi Gras Indians ain't never been rained on this much before. And you cannot proclaim religion. You cannot proclaim to be a naturalist and not pay attention to nature. And I'm not suggesting anything negative. I'm just suggesting a change. We're going through a transformation. You know, the caterpillar becoming the butterfly. We are being forced through a cipher right now, the whole city. And that includes hoodoo and voodoo and spirituality and how it's going to move forward for the next 100 years. That's happening now, whether we're ready for it or not. Some of you remember the talk about the entertainment district long before Hurricane Katrina. And it was voted on, and it was voted down. But if you're paying attention, the entertainment district is upon us. It's here. They're going to reopen two theaters. You know, they're about to build a high rise right there on Canal and Rampart and Basin in that area right there, blocks from St. Louis Cemetery Number 1. So you've got to know that's going to affect, that there's going to be some response. Denise did a very important story not too long ago about the tomb of Marie Laveau being painted pink.
Yeah.
You know, and what happened with that and why, and that was very mysterious. Even how that was handled by the city was very mysterious.
Mm-hmm.
But as I suspected and expected, they counted tourism first, and they hurried up and got that pink off that tomb. Let me tell you, it's white. Okay. They wasn't going to let that stay because no matter what their outward stance is, they know that we play a major role in why people come to New Orleans in the first place. So there's a battle going on for control of voodoo, of hoodoo, of conjure, of root working. And everybody wants a piece and a share. And I'm open to sharing. I really am. I'm not trying to be anyone else. And thank God, I don't really think anybody can be me. That's one of the blessings of our individuality. I'm not trying to be Denise. I'm not trying to be Dr. G. I'm not trying to be, you know, a list of other people I could name, both locally and nationally, who have some personal investment in New Orleans right now. And I think there's enough for all of us. There's enough for all of us. But I think ultimately we have got to return ancestors, ancestral worship and honor, and that permeates your life. That's not something you do just on Sunday. That's not something you do just on a white table. That's not something you do, you know, just in libation pouring. It's in everything that we do. And we've got to begin to teach that and pass that on. I think all the other stuff, the desire to learn our practices and our traditions will naturally come. That's happening anyway, but I'm finding that they're coming for a myriad of reasons and a myriad of agendas, which don't necessarily line up with spirit. And we've got to reinvest in spirit. We have about, 20 minutes left in the show. We do invite more callers, and those who are present on the line, Dr. G, Denise Alvarado, Keisha, I certainly appreciate you and the powerful messages that you all have brought to the table. You all have brought more than a dish to the buffet, and I'm truly grateful for that. And I want to invite more of our listeners to participate at 347-215-8967. 347-215-8967. Do press the number 1 on your telephone keypad. when you are ready with your question, comment, or request. We're going to take just a brief intermission to allow for some rehydration, and then we will be back with more Hoodoo New Orleans Voodoo Secrets and Recipes here on Blog Talk Radio with Dr. G. Love, Keisha from Chicago, Denise Alvarado, and the Divine Prince. All is truly a blessing. Ashe.
Ashe.
Divine all blessed, you are listening live to the Power Lunch, Hoodoo New Orleans Voodoo Secrets and Recipes here on Blog Talk Radio with my very special guest, Denise Alvarado, Dr. G. Love of New Orleans, Keisha from Chicago. And Keisha, you might as well have dual residency because every time I look up, you in a picture in New Orleans.
This is the truth. That's my spirit home. I'm telling you, I'm doing time up here so that my babies can graduate, and I will be back.
Yes, indeed. We certainly appreciate you too. We do. We need fire, and you bring the fire, and I love you for that. It is important that I also It is important that I also note we have about 15 minutes left in the show, but I want to talk about just a general message that Spirit has placed on my heart about voodoo and indigenous practice and tradition. And many of you, I'm sure, already have noticed a resurgence of interest in indigenous practice and tradition. I'm sure Denise is getting a lot of interest in the university, and I want you to talk about that a little bit, too, before we run out of time. I know once or twice a week someone's asking me about initiation, if not with me, with other people, with other paths, what that should look like and how that should be done. And the message that Spirit has given me is that voodoo truly will rise and will have its day. I'm seeing it all over the world, here, Africa, South America, people's interest, people's awareness. I'm sure the Internet plays a big role in that. I knew I'd do my part to promote, to teach, to share the images, to share the video, to share the life that is voodoo. I am not a missionary, in a sense, and I don't evangelize voodoo, if you will. I don't try and encourage people to take on my religion, but I do strive to be a strong representative of the religion and to present, if nothing more, the imagery so that we begin to ignite those ancient centers of consciousness that reconnect us to that. And then we begin to ask questions. We begin to remember, if you will. We begin to associate very modern things that we do with having a very ancient purpose and origin. I know for me, as I begin to grow and evolve spiritually, much of the consciousness of voodoo preceded the knowledge of voodoo. As I begin to study voodoo and be initiated into traditions, and that includes Ifa and many other paths, I began to realize that certain things that I was already doing had a purpose, had a basis, had some ancestral memory trigger for me. And I often credit quartz crystal for being the key to that, the trigger for that. I don't care what your religion, what your path, what your consciousness, in my opinion, one of the greatest leaps of consciousness you can make is to begin to meditate with crystal. Even if you don't understand it yet, just get you some good, clear, and I don't mean lead crystal, I mean real quartz crystal. It's actually cheaper than often lead crystal is. But with the natural stuff, with the natural terminations, with the natural windows, and the natural points. Polished stones are good, but they're even better once you really know what you're doing. But if you are a newcomer to this, a newcomer to meditation, if you're a newcomer to spirituality on any level, I strongly suggest crystal.
Can I jump in for a second there?
Absolutely.
I just wanted to reinforce that because I think there's a common misconception that anything that has to do with crystals is New Age and has nothing to do with African religion or indigenous religions, and that's far from the truth. The quartz, clear quartz crystal is one of the primary means of divination and focal points for Cherokee Indians. So that's a traditional indigenous practice, what you are suggesting. Just wanted to throw that in there.
I find that there is a need to address that because, you know, I like to say the witch hunts were very successful when we talk about all the ways in which we've had to hide ourselves. You know, this goes way back. It goes back to the days of the Inquisition and beyond, and, you know, we'll find ourselves back in Kemet
dealing with monotheism, but that's for a different conversation. But either way, the witch hunts have been very successful, and it's created a program where people are afraid to be affiliated with certain things. And right now, one of the things people don't want to be is hippie. And so I'll be working with groups of people, and I find the same thing. People are like, well, is this like a hippie thing, or is this a new age thing? And I'm like, look, hippies just showed up in the 1960s, and that was just a social movement that took a cross-cultural view at the world and came out of the shell of the United States. And that's, you know, we can thank them in some ways for bringing some of the awareness in. I mean, how it's been processed mm-hmm. through the machine of capitalism is a separate conversation. But I think it is
right.
important to let people know we are reaching into our roots, and this is not related to any of the capitalist impressions or the hippie impressions or any of the modern American impressions of where any of these practices come from.
Right.
Yeah, I absolutely agree.
I also wanted to put some input into the crystals as well, is the making of tinctures with the crystals, sitting your crystals in some water. And one of the tinctures that I make is the citrine tincture when I want to do some creative work, sitting it in a glass and water. And I've shared that with G as well. And it works amazing to unblock some pathways to creativity. And telepathically, it works really well for me. So you might want to look into that as well.
Yeah, I definitely believe there's a deeper science there that even scientists have not gotten to the root of. I often, you know, try and explain it. Similarly, as we take in nutrition through food, but there's another entryway with minerals through our spirit body, through our energetic body, and it can fill in where we might be deficient. It can fill in where we might have a blockage. So that's why I strongly suggest crystal. I found it more effective than therapy. I found it more effective than than any of the various measures that I tried in dealing with my own stuff. And as I began to find healing through that means and utilize it with other people, I found there to be some commonality there with that. And as a musician, my first art was music. I started playing the piano and singing at 3 and playing by ear. And there's a vibrational aspect to working with crystals that the newcomer does not immediately get. But I think that plays also a role in why it's such an effective healing tool and a communication tool, indeed. Your ancestors, your spirit guides will definitely find pathway of communication with you through usage of crystals. We have, about 7 more minutes left in the show. I am certainly appreciative of each and every one of you who are here with us and still listening and still enjoying the show. If you do have a question or comment, please don't wait till the last minute. This probably is the last minute, and I would invite you now to call in at 347-215-8967. If you are already on the line, just press the number 1, and I will definitely open up your line. I also want to remind all of my guests to leave contact information. I'm a firm believer that you have to give it away to keep it. So I want you to share your business information, your community activism information. If you don't have a website, you know, give your Facebook page. But definitely make sure that people can reach you. And I'm a little prejudiced, but especially you, Dr. G, because you're right here in town, you know, and I like to support local energy. Whether it's business, whether it's artists, whether it's healers, I do a lot of promotion of other people, and that's a great deal of what I do every day. So I want all of you, Denise Alvarado, and Keisha, everyone, to make sure that you leave your contact information in these last 5 minutes of the show.
Okay, well, this is Dr. G. Love. One thing I'm going to say is my beloved Elder, are we still here?
I hear you.
Yeah.
Yes. My beloved elder has fallen ill, and so I am located in Florida right now taking care of one of my most beloved elders who has a Parkinson's-ism. I can be found at fivedirectionswellness.com. That's all spelled out, F-I-V-E, fivedirectionswellness.com. And I'm seeing people through New Orleans right now. A number of people have come out here to visit, actually, and get their attunements and continue their work. But I do continue to work through the Internet with, FaceTime or Skype or Google Hangout or these sort of things. And we continue to do ceremony and raise the frequency as I am here with my family holding the frequency for a beloved who raised me up.
Ashe, we honor and respect you, and we're with you in spirit and prayer.
Thank you.
Hey, Keisha?
Yes, and I'm a health worker and women's health educator in Chicago. I do work with trans women, trans feminine persons, and also women at Chicago Women's Health Center. And I can be reached at jess_keisha@yahoo.com. Also, you can reach me on Facebook at Jess Keisha. You can just kind of look that up. I don't know how to do that whole Facebook thing, but so I do work at Chicago Women's Health Center, where we do a lot of giving away free acupuncture appointments. All of our stuff is on a sliding scale so that it's accessible for all women that want and need those services, so gynecological care, breast exams, and so forth.
Cool.
Ashe and Denise Alvarado.
If anybody's interested in learning more in depth about Southern Conjure traditions, feel free to visit my website, crossroadsuniversity.com, for more information about enrolling in classes that are taught by initiated elders in the traditions. And I also have a publishing company. We put out information, publications about New Orleans Voodoo and Southern Conjure traditions specifically at creolemoon.com.
Give thanks. And once again, I want to thank each and every one of you for being a guest and invite you all back. You all have such rich, full ministries and lives and experiences to share, and I invite all three of you to definitely return, and as you create new projects and have new events that you need to announce, I welcome you freely to come back and share that here with us on Hoodoo New Orleans Voodoo Secrets and Recipes here on Blog Talk Radio. And I want to also end the show, of course, with our Congo Square track, for indeed we are grateful for Kalamu Ya Salam and the Congo Square Preservation Society for putting this archive of history and music and rhythm and experience together, and I share it religiously on the show. Just as Indians sing Indian Red religiously, it is a sacred sound, if you will. It is a sacred vibration that reminds us all to retap, to reconnect with our roots, with our ancestors, with the spirits. And as always, remember that I offer you divine peace and joy and prosperity, and that all is truly and indeed a blessing. Ashe.
Congo Square. The Omus Indians prepared this place for us centuries before our arrival. A sacred spot where corn festivals were celebrated. The Omus Indians prepared this place for us centuries before our arrival. Congo Square, a sacred spot where corn festivals were celebrated. And as the colonizers came, our host, the Omus Indians, they pushed aside our host. The colonizers came and pushed aside our host and introduced us in changed. And by the late 1700s, we somehow, recognizing the sacredness of Les Places de Congo, we somehow, and the how of our somehow persuasive methodologies is not clear at this moment. The how is not clear. How our persuasive methodologies worked is not clear at this moment, but nevertheless, even as slaves, we crafted and created a space where we could be free to be we. And thusly we countered the sacrilegiousness of the French, giving great homage to our ancestors as well as giving praise and thanks to our red-blooded brothers and sisters. This is an oral libation toast to Congo Square, to Native Americans, to our ancestors who made a circle out of a square and gave us a way to stay ourselves, save ourselves from the transformatory ugliness of America, which refuses to recognize the spirituality of life, which refuses to recognize the spirituality of life and celebrates death with crosses and crosses, double and triple crosses, the middle passage, the first cross, Christianity, the double cross, and capitalism, the ultimate triple coup de grace cross of our captivity. But the terror of crosses notwithstanding, we sang, we beat, we be, we was and is. Hail Congo Square, Congo, Congo Square. Our African gods have not been obliterated. They have merely retreated inside the beat of us, inside the beat of us. Our African gods have not been obliterated. They have merely retreated inside the beat of us until we are ready to release them into a world that we recreate, a world heralded by the beat, be, beat, being, beating, being of black heart drums. Heart beat, heart beat, heart be at this place, at this place. Be heart beat, be we beating place in new world space, beating being in place in new world, preserving our ancient pace. Our dance is the God walk, our music the God talk. First thing we do, let's get together, circle ourselves into community. No beginning, no end, connected together and singing, ringing, singing in a ring. Second, let's be original, aboriginal, be what we were before we became what we are. Be Bambula dance, be Banza music, and sing song words which have no English translation. Third, let us remember. Let us remember never to forget, even when we can't remember the specifics, we must retain the essentials. Let us remember never to forget, even when we can't remember the specifics, we must retain the essentials. The bounce, the blood flow, the feel, the spirit grow, energy must retain and pass on the essential usness that others want to dissipate with. Hello. Out of us.
Whoa.
But no matter, no matter how much of us they prohibit,
way,
No matter how much of us they prohibit, deep inside us is us. Deep inside us is us. Remains us inside and needs only the beat to set us free. The beat to free us. It is morning, a sun day, a feel, a feel, without shade, but dark, dark with the people black of us in various shades, eclipsing the sun with our elegance. We are centuries later now, and still this sacred ground calls us to remember, to be, to be. We are centuries later now, and still this sacred ground calls us to remember, to beat, to be. Beat Congo Square. Be Congo Square. Beat, be. Beat, be. Beat,
so.
Congo Square. Be Congo Square.
Thank you.